Welcome to Designing Education, the Pathways to Adult Success podcast series. I'm Dr. Robert Balfance, director of the Pathways to Adult Success program and the Everyone Graduates Center at Johns Hopkins University. I'm delighted to have you join us today. This is the second episode in a series of conversations we'll be having with educational thinkers from across the country. We'll talk about what it will take to design an education system that truly empowers all young people and sets them on a pathway to long-term success. In today's episode, I'll be joined by Joel Vargas. Joel is the Vice President of Programs at JFF, a national nonprofit that drives change in the American workforce and education systems to achieve economic advancement for all. It has become a common refrain during the last year and a half that we should not return to things as they were before the pandemic, but use this disruption to create a better education system moving forward. One big and bold idea on how to do so comes from JFF in a recent publication titled The Big Blur, an argument for erasing the boundaries between high school, college, and careers, and creating one new system that works for everyone. It involves reimagining the last 2 years of high school and the first 2 years of college. There is urgency to this work. We know that even before the pandemic, the path from high school to a family-supporting job was closed off to far too many young adults. The current system was neither sufficient before the pandemic nor adaptive enough during it. The question is, how can we do better? Welcome, Joel, and thank you for joining me today.
Bob, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. You're proposing a big change. You call it the big blur, and you want to reimagine the last 2 years of high school and the first 2 years of college. Can you tell us just what you're thinking here, what you're trying to do and why we need to do it?
Yeah. Well, thanks for inviting me to share the ideas that we captured in the paper. I mean, as the name suggests, we're really calling for a blurring of the boundaries between what we traditionally conceive of as, you know, our high school experience. A lot of us went through that. Most of us went through that. A lot of us, especially in the policymaking world, then went to college. You know, maybe we went to a community college first and then went on to a four-year or went straight to a four-year. And then, you know, that is supposed to reportedly prepare us for some kind of career. And then we know that it actually, in actuality, you know, what you major in college doesn't always play out into what you end up doing as a career. So we thought in this day and age, that whole set of relationships between institutions had to get tighter. And actually, we wondered why, you know, we still relied on that system in many ways when that system or those systems grew up in a different time. They grew up in the industrial age when we had a much different economy. And truth be told, we now have an economy that demands more post-secondary trained and educated workers. So we gave ourselves kind of permission to try to rethink the system, reimagine, as you said. So, you know, just to kind of encapsulate that, we thought, what if you rearrange what we currently think of as grades 11 through 14, you know, the last 2 years of high school and the first 2 years of post-secondary, and put those together instead of separating them. That would mean that maybe the current high school that we know today would only run up through grade 10. It would mean essentially, in some respects, a merger between the last 2 years of high school and the first 2 years of college. But as I say that, I also hesitate to say that because we wanted to conjure a new vision for a new kind of institution that would be, you know, in essence, something that's built for older adolescents. There's not much difference between the student who is a graduate of grade 12 and then who shows up in a community college classroom or, you know, in the first year of a four-year college. But we treat them quite differently. And so we wonder, what if you put those together and really intentionally designed for those populations and furthermore connected their experience to the needs of local industry? You know, not to mention the future of work in general, sort of a core set of skills so that they could keep going in their education or be adaptable to what we know is going to be a new economy that we have, in fact, now where jobs are destroyed and created, with some frequency. So people don't hang on to the same job for 30 years anymore. They have to learn to be adaptable and transfer their skills to new contexts. So anyway, the institutions would be cost-free for students. So essentially, they get a post-secondary education, a post-secondary credential or degree up to 2 years for free. They could then go on and get a good job at the end of that experience with that post-secondary training, or they could keep going to a BA. So the design would account for that and be built for those purposes. So you would create financing streams that would really be applied to supporting students in these grade levels. You would have staff, teachers, professors who would actually be trained to teach in these institutions and to teach this age group. And also to have the understanding of the industry demands that students are going to need to meet. And then they would be governed. You would have someone at a governor's office or department of, you wouldn't have a department of ed and higher ed anymore necessarily. You might have a department of whatever you would call it, blur institutions. And they would really be held, they would hold the field accountable for outcomes for students attending these institutions and in these grade levels. And you asked why we conceived of this, sort of spoke to that previously, but it's born a bit out of impatience, to be frank. I mean, we have as a country really been focused on post-secondary attainment for all and improving that, especially for Black, Latinx and low income youth. And there have been some improvements and we cheer those on. And we've been, proud to be a part of alliances that have, I think, really helped to move the needle. But that needle is moving so slowly. And we think it's in part because the systems aren't designed right. So, in part, this is saying we need to redesign the systems to get the outcomes that we want.
I'm going to pick up on that. Implicit and I guess explicit in a call for big change is a critique of the current system and saying the current system isn't working, right? We don't need big change if the current system is working well. And, on one hand, we can say that, that there's sort of signs all around us that that's true. So one that sticks with me is that, pre-pandemic, in most states, between 1 in 5 and 1 in 4 high school students were chronically absent, missing a month or more of school, which tells me that basically they were voting with their feet, that as it was currently designed, the high school wasn't working for them. And then during the pandemic, we know that, some students expressed that they felt more agency working part-time to help support their family through the pandemic than they did in school. And they actually felt like they were making a difference, helping their family, being independent. And then the challenge there, of course, though, is that those jobs that look pretty good at 17 don't look good at 25, right? There isn't really a pathway from that part-time service work. So I guess my question is, wanted to hear your thoughts on what are some of the big flaws of the current system that really call out for a need to sort of build a better new system?
Yeah, these are really great points, Bob. But I actually think that one of the reasons that young people drift and take time to figure things out, in part, yes. I mean, I think it's a normal part of development, right? change your mind, try to figure things out, change course. On the other, I feel like the experience and the systems that we've set up around, kind of the way of helping young people navigate through that, the high school, the college, and then you'll figure out what your career you want. It does not structure in the kind of experiences that young people need to try out things and to figure out, hey, I thought I wanted to get into healthcare, but the sight of blood really is not something that I want to deal with every day. And, I'm going to change course. Well, wouldn't you want to find that out a lot earlier? And I feel like our high schools kind of sequester off young people to sort of think about those things in theory, rather than experiencing, you know, their future, possible future selves, and even through some trial and error, deciding, no, I want to do a different route. So I think we could structure those kind of experiences earlier, also build up some momentum in college earlier. We know that through a lot of research that credit accumulation is a good sign in college of completing, you know, and if you do that earlier through sort of dual enrollment experiences, early college, you can build that momentum early. And just to affirm something you said earlier, I do think young people are voting with their feet. There's sort of three signs that I feel like kind of call for a blurring approach. One is there is increasing interest and a proliferation of dual enrollment and early college approaches. And increasingly, it's kind of a hybrid of this or this part of the same idea. Grade 13 efforts where you have really high performing high schools that have by many measures prepared their students for college, you know, according to college readiness measures and accountability. And then they found that their students go to college and flame out for various reasons. So they're beginning to build bridges into post-secondary for their students and provide some high school support. So there's sort of like this institutional reaction happening already, which is showing that, you know, let's build some bridges earlier into college for young people. The other is our youth demographic is shrinking. People are not having as many babies as they used to. Community college enrollments are shrinking even before the pandemic, and now that's just accelerated because of the pandemic. And they're maintaining their enrollments in many places through dual enrollment by serving high school students. So there's sort of a merging going on already. And then, I don't know, you probably know these results better than I, but there are a lot of survey results coming out of students and parents where students are showing, you know, just increasing numbers of questions about the return on investment of college and questioning that. They're worrying about the debt load and they want routes that are faster to careers.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think in many ways, the youth are leading the way, though not in a maybe systematic and fully clear way. But another thing I've noticed is that many students actually experienced during the pandemic something closer to a college-like existence in high school, which is typically in high school that they just had Zoom classes for a couple hours in the morning. And the rest of the day, the kids were given asynchronous assignments, sort of do this work on your own. And that's much closer to a college schedule. In college, you go to class for less time, but you spend more time working independently. They are sort of saying they like that. They found that to be a better system because it let them figure out when they did that work. They didn't have to do it in the confines of the school day. They want both, right? Which makes sense. And that's really is that blurring of sort of college and high school and work. They're asking for it. All right. So if the youth are there, the status quo often isn't, right? And we know that that's pretty hard to change. And there's a lot of voices in education to keep things as they are. So what do you think are some of the biggest barriers that will be encountered in trying to reimagine this high school to college space?
Yeah, I'll start by saying there's, because I'm going to agree with your point that I see a lot of barriers. And I've actually been pleasantly surprised that the reception of this paper has been greeted with a lot of head nodding in the field, you know, sort of at all levels, you know, and applause like, yes, this is the right idea. Now, what do I do? Because to speak to the barriers, you go back to the day to day and people have to envision what they can do to move towards this vision from where they sit, which is in a system and a silo. You know, that's really hard to push against, especially when they're being held at every level, you know, accountable for what the institutions are supposed to be doing now. That's changing a little bit. There are some states that have opened up their graduation requirements and accountability systems to encourage more of these kind of approaches, early college as well, early college experiences. But it's just by and large, you know, the high schools are still kind of held accountable for teaching the standards. And for colleges, you know, it has been a sea change. So I don't mean to discourage, but they're focused on a completion agenda, getting more of their students who they start with through to graduation. And it's funny because, again, by and large, I feel like the colleges still haven't made the connection that part of the solution to that problem is reaching down earlier and working with students when they're younger and forming partnerships with local high schools. And looking up, I think too few of them also see that there are ways that they need to create tighter relationships to the labor market and with industry. I'm painting with a broad brush here, but I say by and large, and they're not, you know, they're not held accountable for that. It's not something that accreditors look for, you know, in terms of outcomes. So when you have folks who want to change and they're still in their silos and systems, and it's hard for them to figure out, you know, how to bust out of that and move towards something that's a bit more transformational. And so the natural drift is to status quo. I have some ideas about how you start to poke through that a little bit, but those are just some of the barriers that we have to respect.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like a better deal. It seems right. It's less costly. It leads to something that's more attuned to actually so that my kids can earn an income and become self-supporting and not end up back in my couch. Right. On the other hand, you know, in many years of working for school improvement, I've come up with this, you know, acronym, which is SPSSQ, which is successful parents and support of the status quo, which is it worked for me and I'm going to fight to the end to make sure that my kids get the same thing, because education is, I see that's made my path to where I am, and I want to make sure my kids have that which I know works. And in that same parent on different days, you might find support and challenge based on, you know, their headspace. So I think that's a, you know, interesting part of the puzzle. So, you know, building on that, what do you think are some of the steps we need to take to get to this new model? And does the pandemic give us some openings that might not have been there?
And when parents see their students feeling good about their education experience, I think they tend to go with that. And, you know, along the way, sort of say, oh, and you're getting this, if it's a situation where they're getting it for free, terrific. You know, that'll be cost savings for us down the road. So there's sort of no better way to evangelize than through actually having people experience it instead of, you know, trying to start with shoving an idea down their throat about another reform. I think this kind of nudging is going to be really important. And then building off of that. So not just any old dual enrollment, but I feel like the next generation of that work is having colleges, and I'm hearkening back to my earlier point about colleges seeing the college completion issue and having a key strategy be reaching down to younger students and reaching down to them with guided pathways, which increasingly colleges are seeing as something they need to do for their quote unquote regular students, you know, creating clear program maps that are mapped to a clear career pathway for students, and having that be more transparent for their the adults and the young people that they serve. Why not, you know, start earlier with that approach and really use it as a strategy so that students, they're coming in and they've got a head start on the degree or credential. And that kind of thoughtful design, I think, is the next generation of dual enrollment work. So it's not just an add-on or a bolt-on, but it's seen as something that's just become kind of a more integral part of high school. And that, you know, short of a full blur, that would look pretty good. That would start to be looking like a blur. So that's kind of one of the ways we thought about it, is taking advantage of those pushes that are already happening in small, blurry ways and making them even blurrier.
And, you know, one thing that sort of, I think, could help build upon that when I think about this, right, is that, although I know in different states they have different formal and informal roles, but governors are one of the few folks that sit astride both the higher ed and the K-12 system. And I think part of our real struggles in creating something better is that at the state level, where a good share of their funding is found, K-12 and higher ed sort of compete against each other for appropriations every year, right? So they're the opposite of good friends. They're like competitors for dollars. And that's not going to work, right? It's really only a governor that could say that's sort of insane. In this era when like our health of our state depends on us graduating students ready to support their families. Like if we don't graduate kids who can support families, like we're sunk. And so I really think someone's got to sort of just bring folks together and say, look, it's a new world and it's got to be about cooperation and a win. There's a way to make this be a win-win for both of you. It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. But someone's got to step into that, I think. I think that to me seems like some force has got to step in, because otherwise there's things pulling people apart even when they should be together.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, at the end of the day, taking these like bigger step changes, it's going to take governors, maybe even mayors. You know, they can only, they're held back a bit by state policy, but they have a bully pulpit and they do have some authority to bring people together in a different way and make resources flow in a different way. So I do think they also tend to come with kind of business. They can come with business behind them, business and industry. And I think that's another force. Those two forces, kind of the executive leadership in cities and states, along with business and industry, can kind of ignite faster moves towards this kind of vision.
Yeah, I mean, it's and the other thing I think is that it's potentially going to be hopeful is that, you know, at that level, if a couple states do it and it's successful, the others will follow. Like, I mean, states look at each other and they do follow each other. And, you know, one thing I've seen is that a small thing, but I think it could, to your point, could be a big lever, like the dual enrollment is in Ohio now. They have a system where you can match, you can use standards for multiple subjects and say, if you meet both those standards, you actually get 2 credits for that class. And often it's a CTE class and an academic class. And that has the further advantage of now that you have 2 credits for one class, you have more time for experiential learning. So they're almost taking that idea of standards and turning it around and using it to their advantage to say, well, if the standards was matter, it's not how many courses you take, it's how many standards you need. And they're using that to create the space. So I think that's a small example of how people can reinvent within the system and find new ways. But I want to bring us back down to the schoolhouse door. We were getting, we all agree that the big change happens at higher levels, but the work happens in schools. And we know schools are struggling right now. It's been a rocky reopening. There's staff shortages, which has made folks even more tired and exhausted. And so there's been this growing push in some cases just to get back to whatever normal is. In that environment, have you what are you hearing from educators and folks on the ground about the need for, the desire, excitement about rethinking high school into college?
Again, I think it's in theory a welcome sort of vision, you know, and an instinct that this is what we ought to be trying to do. But on the day-to-day level, you're right, Bob, it's like we got to get back to normal first. And, you know, we got to figure out the right social distancing spacing between students and just having them come back and making sure everybody's vaccinated, you know, whatever. I mean, young people have lost their social skills because they haven't been in school settings. Right. So it feels like a crisis management in many ways. So, even though it's been welcome, my experience is at all levels, including at the schoolhouse level, with not open arms, but with some enthusiasm, you know, how then, you know, what should I do next is a question. And what are my incentives? And, you know, I'll admit we don't, you know, get giving you some versions of how you build slowly towards this. So in the same spirit, I think there are things to build on at the schoolhouse level, the even college campus level, even that I've seen in the past that could present some opportunities for leverage. And one is, you know, high school educators, they do like dual enrollment. Not as many college educators do, but some of them, like a critical mass, I think, see the benefits of this. And when it's an eye opener when they realize that a high school student has been in their class the whole time that they thought was a regular college student. And they say, oh, this young person's really got something here. This is great. I wish I had more of them. For high school teachers, a lot of them see the extra privilege and prestige of kind of being both a high school instructor and a college instructor, for example. Where the magic really happens, although I would say it's rare, is where we've seen instances where the school district or high school and college partners actually do some joint professional development and curriculum design around their dual enrollment. That really goes a long way to breaking down sort of the walls that they have and the preconceived notions of what whose job it is to do what. And they really welcome that kind of joint PD and perspective sharing. That was another thing early on that got when I saw those, I get, although it's rare, when I've seen that happen, it made me think, you know, I think there is something to this idea of training educators to support older, you know, mid to older adolescents. There's something there that they can share in that experience, and they're in it when it's done in a spirit of co-design. So I feel like we could define, I mean, this is not even to mention like high school teachers who go to, these are rare too, externships into industry, you know, so that they learn more about the demands of careers that they should be preparing their students for, and that they have to stay kind of up to date or learn fresh about new industries and the skills that you need. They really enjoy that. I feel like those are things we could build off of to create sort of the school level demand and also competencies for doing kind of blur approaches. So as you can see, I'm looking for any opportunity and leverage we can get to create some positive will and momentum.
That's the way real change happens. And, you know, one thing I've noticed is a significant change at the high school level. I would agree with the growth of dual enrollment, but also the reinvention of CTE and the sort of destigmatization of it. So I'm noticing more and more teachers, you know, English teachers, math teachers, the sort of core academic subject teachers, really advocating for their students to have more like internships and more experiential learning and more career development. And not as a way of like, oh, you're not quite up to academics, you should go here, which was the way that the stigma that still exists and why and we still have to be on guard for, but really in the spirit of, no, we're not providing our students enough exploration of the possibilities of the world. And just this narrow focus of take your classes, do well, and go to college and don't think about it isn't really necessarily the best way for youth development.
Yeah, I agree. And what I fear also is like on the flip side of we don't want tracking to happen where these are dumping grounds, right? Or other people's pathways. And what I see happening on the other hand too, is there are high quality pathways that, you know, suddenly it's hard for, low income and Black and Latinx students to have access to those, you know, because they're good and they're very attractive, they're becoming more attractive to students who probably would figure this out on their own anyway. So it's hard to strike that balance.
Yeah, let's dig a little deeper on the equity challenge here. I mean, because I think that, you know, at the biggest level, this whole idea is an equity idea, but in the execution, you're right, there could be unintended consequences and sort of the early adopters could be co-opted, right, by the sort of those that see it as it's makes total sense. If you have advantages, you want to preserve them for your kids and you're going to be on the lookout for all the avenues that provide that. So what are some of the equity challenges we might face here? You know, not so much in the design, but I think in the rollout. And you were starting to talk about some of those.
Well, I think the big idea is the more you create something that is good, right? You have to find, first of all, the capacity. So there's the adult capacity to execute these. We know that varies widely by communities and being able to attract folks. So that's an intractable problem. I don't even know how to start to get my head around that. But the big idea we were sort of playing with is the more I've seen this with early college schools, you know, we really targeted low income first generation populations, but the more success that those schools showed, which was great with those populations, the more demand there was from communities and parents in those communities to get their kids to go and get into those schools. So it became tougher, becomes tougher for low income and first gen students to get into those.
And I think actually fundamental to the big blur happening is this idea that a series of, I would say, like experiences, exposures, applications, and doing in both college and career. So that's like, you know, internships, dual enrollment, a career industry, you know, industry-based certifications, that whole sequence has got to sort of become universal for everybody. Right now, we get very excited by saying, oh, we've expanded our internship program. It went from 5% of our kids to 10% of our kids. And that almost gets back to your earlier point of this very slow incremental improvement place we're in right now, right? Where we're like trying to just, you know, marginally increase access to existing programs, when really it has to be the much more transformational thing of, no, the common experience for all kids in high school should be to have this wide range of both college and career exposures, experiences, applications, which take it all the way becomes the big blur, right? And you're actually, it's not, you're in what formerly had been 12th grade, and it's no longer not clear how much of your day you're in high school and how much is in college, right?
Yeah, and I totally agree. I would add one more sort of equity concern that I can see, you know, already happening now with the resurgence of CTE, which I think is terrific in many respects that you already mentioned. And I think the danger of still having folks, and I can see it, even, you know, state legislators that we've spoken to about blur approaches or even just CTE pathways. I say that's great because we've got so many kids who shouldn't, you know, they're not going to go to college. They weren't made to go to college. You know, in some ways is the implication. And you know, I think you and I know that the highest quality sort of CTE programs actually prepare young people quite well for college experience as well. So really talking about this work as college and career readiness and success, not or, you know, it's, and too many times it's framed as a college or career sort of proposition. And I think that leads to the dangers of tracking and low quality programming.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So I want to end with a question on communications. So one of the last big ideas that hit the educational policy and practice world was the Common Core. And for a while, this was like a meteor rocket, right? It was maybe the last bipartisan idea in education. It was driven by governors, bipartisan governors, supported by a wide spectrum of the educational policy world, and, you know, was got adopted by state legislatures, right? Which is hard to imagine in our current state. And then it sort of died on the vine, partly, I would argue, as a communication challenge back to parents, because at the governor and the state level, it was sold as an economic development idea, right? We've got to be competitive internationally. Our kids have got to, you know, all learn these core big important ideas that are linked to college, college readiness. And that's what we need to stay competitive. And I think when they tried to explain this to parents at that level, they didn't care. They didn't feel like their kids were competing for a job with someone from another country. Even if they were, they didn't see it. They wanted their kid to succeed, right? And do well in the current, and that's as much about competing against their neighbors to get into selective schools as it is about, competing with the world. And I always thought if they had, you know, made up more about, don't you want your kid to know more than you? Like something like that, that would be, that they might have had a better chance, right? As opposed to like, we're doing this to be competitive internationally. So I'm just wondering about the big blur and communicating it and where maybe like there's pitfalls and opportunities and like how that's presented, both at the political policy level where you have to operate, but then also back on that ground parent level where we've got to really get them behind it as well.
Yeah, it's a great question. And, you know, it is going to be really difficult to boil down to a simple set of messages, right? Like just apropos of our earlier conversation about it's got to be about college and career ready, right? And it took me, you know, a minute to explain it. Maybe I wasn't as cogent as I could have been, but, you know, that tells me we're going to have to really boil this down to some easily, you know, understandable messages and compelling for parents. So I think that is the toughest challenge. I mean, I can talk about the policymaker part because I think that one's actually a little easier.
No, I mean, we know very much that parents are nervous and students are nervous about debt. Sometimes they don't even fully understand it. They just, you know, I've always told some of my college friends that, you know, and until they find a solution for it, if a kid comes home and says, I want to go to X, Y, and Z university, the first thing someone is going to do is going to put that university into their phone and up it's going to pop a very big number, which is the sticker, the list price for room and board. And you could do all the talking you want about financial aid. It's hard to live down that first sticker shock of $45,000 a year when that's greater than the family's income, right? So I really do think like that clear communication that this is a way to give your kid a real leg up on the future that's not going to break the family's back financially or make you make these huge, hard choices between my kid's future and our just ability to survive the day to day.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I think that the policymaker angle, is a little easier. We've had a lot of interest from states who said, tell us, you know, how we might build on what we've already done and do more. We had one state actually was in the middle of a task force really rethinking its higher education system and used the Big Blur to inform their deliberations and recommendations. So I'm hoping that that leads to some kinds of changes along the lines of what we discussed earlier. Even if they're incremental, I think they'll end up nudging the system more in this direction.
Well, thank you, Joel, for a stimulating conversation and bold ideas that you're working on and making come true to really help build pathways to adult success for all our youth. This conversation and JF's works in general and the Big Blur specifically, I think really brings home that the world has changed and we need to build educational systems for the world where it is, not where it was. And it's clear this is going to really involve rethinking that high school to college space and really I encourage everybody to dig deep into the Big Blur and the work and really be stimulated by these really provocative and hopeful ideas on how we can really do this better and really serve all our students and all our families and give them a really clean path to their future and then our future. This is Robert Balfance from the Everyone Graduate Center. Glad to be with you today. Be sure to join us for our next edition of the Designing Education podcast series. Onwards and be well. Thank you.